Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
One, two, three, vote! My fellow truth seekers, glad you could join us beneath the surface tonight where faith and reason meets, where truth, life, and love are one, where we engage the culture with unchanging truth, bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Glad you could join us again, my fellow truth seekers, from 10 to, we are here from 10 to 11 tonight, as we usually are. And tonight, we go beneath the surface on the topic of peace. That's right, peace. P-E-A-S-E. What is peace?
Did you just say P-E-A-S-E?
P-E-A-C-E.
Okay.
But you gotta unclog your ears,
okay.
Mr. Kent.
All right.
All right.
I think we got to go back and listen to the tape.
Topic of peace. No, I don't think so. Are you tired of feeling anxious, depressed, fearful of the future, angry? Are you feeling stagnant or insecure, hopeless, and confused? These are all challenges of the human condition. Is peace attainable? Is it possible? And what really is peace? Some, if not all, of those things we're going to go over with my guest tonight, Mr. Kent Niever, who is right across from me, who you already heard. And so you can give us a call anytime during our conversation. And if you even want to steer it off in a nice little tangent, feel free. We'd love to have you. 978-454-4980. Almost forgot it, Kent. 978-454-4980. And we've, as usual, we have Cindy behind the glass who does her vinyl vault right after Beneath the Surface. So as soon as you come up to the surface after our show, be sure to listen to Cindy's vinyl vaults. All right, Mr. Kent.
Good evening.
What is it like being you tonight?
I don't guess it's too much different from what it's like being me in general. But I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to have had Monday off from work. I'm glad that the weather turned around. And glad we had a nice day Saturday. That was nice.
Yeah, now we were talking on the way up here because I met you in the parking lot. Your family doesn't have or never had really a tradition of visiting cemeteries during Memorial Day.
No, we never had a Memorial Day tradition of visiting cemeteries. Yeah. And to be honest with you, it was so foreign to me that I don't believe I was even aware of this tradition until maybe the past few years.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I didn't know that that was a normal thing. I thought you just had a cookout and everybody, you know, maybe waved an American flag. And you thought of veterans and especially the fallen, and but I didn't know about the tradition of visiting cemeteries.
Yeah, well, not everybody has it, but ever since I was little, my family, particularly my parents, used to go and visit people in the family who have gone before them.
Yep. Yeah, and, it makes a lot of sense to memorialize them, to remember.
And of course,
them.
My father just passed away, so I was able to go visit his grave, and the stone isn't even there yet.
The hole
for the stone is there, but they haven't placed it yet.
Mm.
So,
grandmother passed at just about the same time that your father passed.
And was she buried in the area?
She's down in the Fall River area.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah. So not too far.
So our bodies are destined, all of them are destined for the cemetery, for the ground. And if that's not, why that isn't on the front of our minds on a daily basis is beyond me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's just so close and so near to everybody, whether it be a few decades or a couple of years or even a few days.
Yeah.
We never know.
That's right.
We never know when we're going to pass on. Okay, but anyway, that's a tangent from our main topic, which is the word or the concept of the reality of peace. Now, I guess I'll start with this. I mean, a lot of people, you know, wish you peace. We see it in, we'll get to what the 1960s meant by peace, and we'll also get to what Christ in the Bible means by peace. Yeah. But just the fact that we offer it or we give it or we wish it to people presumes something, doesn't it? It presumes that we don't have it.
Right. Exactly. It presumes that it's at least an ideal, if not the ideal, state of being, to be in a state of peace, to be at peace.
Right. Now, if it's what we're meant to be, which is a state of peace, or to be at peace, and we're not there, then let me put two and two together and ask the question, why? Why do we not have the fullness of peace on a regular basis?
You know, it's funny. You just mentioned what you call the tangent, contemplating our own mortality. And I think there are so many, for most of us, in a certain sense, there are unknowns. There are so many variables that seem to face us. You mentioned a variable of when do we confront our mortality? Are we going to die in 2 minutes or 2 decades or, you know?
Yeah.
We don't know. That's a variable. That's a little unsettling. So
something we do not have control over.
Something we do not have control over, unless you want to consider suicide or murder or euthanasia, these sorts of things.
Well, it seems to me that you're touching upon two very basic and main things, main reasons why we don't possess peace on a daily basis. Number one, we do not have control over everything, including the most important things.
Right.
And number two, we know that we're going to die, and we can't control that.
Right. Not only there are what I would call little deaths, like sickness and suffering and pain, and we have little to no control over that as well. Where we try to have control is how we respond to sickness, suffering, and pain, how we conceptualize it, how we make sense of it. And I think it's fairly typical, even for people of faith, when they encounter a certain degree of suffering or pain, to be undone by it to some extent. You hear about the people who even do have faith and say, God, how could you let this happen to me? Why me, God? How could I?
All right. I think we need to start from the beginning here, because it seems like what we're saying is that that pain, suffering, the disquiet in our soul is not natural to us.
Right. And we're kind of touching on physical pain, but I think, you know, physical pain is probably less significant or weighty upon our souls than psychological or emotional or moral pain weighs on it, because we can't escape it.
Yeah. I mean, they say that that animals can feel pain.
Right.
But they cannot suffer.
Morally, right.
And the reason they cannot suffer is because they don't have that rational intellect and free will that we have, that we're able to have self-consciousness.
And put it in context. Yeah.
So not only do we feel pain on a sensual and bodily level, but we know that we feel pain, and we internally experience that as I am in pain.
Right.
It's not just that I feel pain, but that I know I feel pain, and I'm in that existential kind of a there's a spiritual dimension to it that humans suffer.
Whenever
they don't just feel pain, they suffer.
Whenever we feel pain, we try to make sense of it. We try to say, well, I mean, and I don't mean, we don't even necessarily try to make philosophical sense of it. We'll just go to a doctor and say, doctor, make sense of my pain. Why am I suffering? What is the cause?
Alleviate.
What do we do about it? Yeah. Right? All of these things. Because we're trying to make sense of our pain.
And we know it's not normal.
Right.
This isn't how I'm supposed to be.
Exactly.
So please fix it. No other animal goes through that deliberation.
There is nothing like suffering to teach us what it means to be normal. Right? Yeah. In other words, suffering is an excellent way of showing us what humans are not meant to be or not meant to endure, right?
Yeah.
We know that the ideal of being a human is to live free of suffering.
Right. Now, would you, being a man of faith, would you go back to the Adam and Eve story in sacred scripture and say that there was no suffering before mankind sinned against God?
I would say that. And it's hard not to go to that, being a man of faith, as you say. I would, before my conversion, when I was an atheist, I would not have gone there. I would not have thought of, you know, the fact that this is a fallen world.
You would just say blank happens, like those bumper stickers.
This is life, right?
Yeah.
This is the reality of the world. But the question is, which philosophers and theologians have sought to answer throughout time and cultures and religions and whatnot, is why?
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 Right.
And so what, when you talk about the Garden of Eden, we see why. We see that the human ideal is to live in a state free of suffering.
Right.
And not just free of suffering, but at peace.
Exactly. So that was the original idea, that God was to did give, well, first of all, he made a creature, one of the very, very many that he made, but the only one, as far as we know, at least the only physical one, in his image and likeness.
Right.
So he made persons, because he's three persons.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and he gave them extra gifts. One of them was freedom from suffering. So we were not meant to suffer.
Right.
And we were supposed to live in the fullness of peace.
And yet there was the capacity to suffer.
The capacity was there.
That was built into us.
The natural capacity.
Right. And it's what is this capacity to suffering? It's actually, I guess you would say, a response to a deficiency.
Yes.
Right? So we know, ideally, we're supposed to be at peace and not, you know, this is interesting that it's Memorial Day and we remember people who served, people who fell. And we think about the kind of peace that is achieved militarily or politically, diplomatically, et cetera, which I would have to say peace is a misnomer for these things.
Right.
Because generally what you have is ought to be called either a truce, a cessation of hostilities,
right.
A cessation of fighting in some way, but it's not peace. Peace implies a harmony, right?
Yeah.
I want to say the ideal of peace implies a harmoniousness.
All right, well, let's get back to the beginning, because I want to first, before we delve into, well, how do we attain peace, I want to know why we're not at peace.
Yeah.
So getting back to that wonderful, profound story that is so multidimensional in its meaning, the Adam and Eve Garden of Eden story, that God created man not to suffer, even though he has the capacity, because, like you mentioned a minute ago, suffering is the result of or caused by a lack of something.
Right.
Something is diminished.
Sure.
Now, how the story goes is that mankind sinned against God.
Right.
And hence they were disgraced.
Right.
The supernatural life and love of God was taken from them.
They were deprived of grace.
And they were, so there's something diminished in mankind for which he was made. For which he was made.
Sure. I remember even as a kid, when I wasn't really an atheist, but I was not raised religious in any sort of religious way. But, you know, I guess anyone who grew up in, say, the 70s was familiar with the basics of Christianity. And what I always understood, you know, the story of Adam and Eve and original sin to be, was it's something that you were burdened with, right? It's sort of like the you picture these old movies where there's someone goes to prison and they have a ball and chain shackled to their ankle. It's something you're dragging around with you that you're not supposed to have. That's what I thought happened in the Garden of Eden, that they were burdened with something that they shouldn't have been burdened with. There's a sense in which you could express it that way, but really it was a deprivation. They were deprived of something that they should have had.
So they weren't.
And that's the peace. That's the state of grace, being in perfect communion, perfect harmony with God. Because if
they weren't given something extra, you're saying,
exactly,
to make them miserable.
Right.
They themselves said no to their fulfillments.
Right. So, like, literally, these days we have some people who are convicted of a crime or something like that, or are set out on parole, they'll have to wear one of those ankle bracelet things. That's the way I thought of original sin before, is that there's something you're stuck with now that you shouldn't have. Well, that's really not what
it's more like. It's more like a blindness is to the eye than a ball of chain is
right
to the body.
It's something that's missing.
Yeah.
Right. Original sin means we are, as you said, disgraced. We lost the grace that we were created with.
All right. So then we became, as a human race, as a species, diminished in the capacity that we were meant to be. So we can't be fulfilled perfectly in this life.
Right.
So there, that at least that lays the foundation for why we're not at peace on a regular basis in our life. Now we're going to try to find out, is it attainable?
Right.
And we're going to talk to you about that as soon as I try to figure out what song this is. Is that a
I don't know.
Sounds familiar.
Is it about peace? Is it about a lack of peace? Is it about being
Cindy,
disgraced?
Cindy is good at that when it comes to what we're talking about. Yeah. Is this a peaceful song, Cindy?
It's called Wonderland by Night by Bert Kiefer, and I'm just playing that because I think that it will relax your soul.
I'm afraid I'm going to fall asleep right now. You want to take over, Cindy, if I do with this song? 978.
It's kind of gentle. It's kind of relaxing.
It is.
It's peaceful.
978-454-4980. We're talking about peace here on Beneath the Surface. So if you want to get beneath the surface with us, 978-454-4980 is our phone number. Or you can Facebook comment us at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. Or you could email us at btsradio980.com. In a minute, we'll be right back. You don't go away. Smoke on the Water? Not sure what this has to do with peace.
I don't know. It's deep, though.
Yeah, it's water.
And it's purple.
You go beneath the surface. One of my first songs that I played sang when I was in a rock band as a kid.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
I don't know if I ever sang that in a rock band, but definitely played it.
Gosh, I bet I can remember all the words.
And I don't know if I could. I might be able to. But definitely I know in those days, in the 70s and 80s, it was an easy riff to pick up on the guitar.
Yeah. We all came out to Montreux
on the Lake Geneva shoreline.
To play
to make records with a mobile.
We didn't have much time. Frank Zappa and the Mothers
had the best place around. I don't think that line comes there, though.
Frank Zappa and the Mothers. Yeah, they did.
Had
the best place around.
Mm-hmm. But some stupid with a flare gun
burned the place to the ground. Right. Very good.
Uh-huh.
Smoke on the water, fire in the sky.
Right. Mm-hmm.
978-454-4980. Just reminiscing here at Beneath the Surface. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. And tonight we're going beneath the surface on the topic of peace. What is it? Is it attainable? Why don't we have it? What's the best way of getting it? All right. So in our first segment, Kent, whatever your name is, we talked about why we are not born with peace. I mean, we're not. Babies are not born with peace.
No.
They're crying all the time.
Babies are not at peace, yeah.
I mean, once in a while they have it, but still, we're just not.
Well, it's like the rest of us. We experience these glimpses, these fleeting moments where we sense it. And
we know that it's home, in a sense. That's how I'm supposed to be.
We know that's what it is. And we know when we get away from it. But it's really, you know, I think there are a lot of false ideas of peace out there, too. Like, just calmness means peace, right?
Right, yeah.
But, you know, just kind of calming yourself doesn't mean that you're at peace.
Well, here's the... I tell you what, Kent. You mentioned something that brought me back to a thought that I had earlier, and that is... It's kind of a catch 21 situation, catch 22 situation, 23,
inflation.
Yeah, catch 22 situation where you really cannot have peace without silence, and you cannot seek silence or be silent without peace.
Right. You can have pleasure without silence.
Yeah, we're not talking about pleasure.
But this is a key point though.
Yeah.
A lot of people think I will be at peace if I make my life all about pleasure. Then I'll finally be at peace, because if I'm all about
I've
pleasure,
arrived.
Then there's no suffering, right? Right? If I can just drive out suffering by filling my life with more and more and more pleasure, then I will finally be at peace. I think this is a delusion. I think this is, you know, a dog chasing his tail.
Yeah, and the problem, again, is that we begin with a lack of inner peace.
Yeah.
And, you know, the... You can't really not have peace. I mean, excuse me, you can't really have peace without silence. And, of course, the modern world is very... It militates against that every day of our lives.
Yeah.
But people seek noise in their lives, I think, because they're not at peace.
Yeah.
And they're covering up that lack, that diminishment that we were talking about earlier, with all of this worldly noise and these pleasures that you speak of.
Right.
And that's why they have retreats.
That's right. Yes, Cindy. Thank you, behind the glass.
Yeah, to get away from
to get away
the noise,
from the
like,
noise.
All the pollution and of our senses.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
But I think that there is, you know, I think yoga is very popular now. Other things, Buddhism, I don't know if that's still as popular as it was, say, I don't know, in the 60s,
but it's
70s.
It's an attempt at this.
It's an attempt at this. And but what I seem to find with things like this is that it's more about being calm than being at peace. It's trying to eliminate the things around you that disturb your calmness.
That's step one, though. There is a step two.
But wait a second.
Yeah.
These things are not... It's not possible to eliminate these things. So what we end up doing in order to try to eliminate the things that rob us of our peace is we become destructive people, right? Instead of being peaceful people, we become destructive people.
It's kind of funny. I was watching right before I came here on CNN, the show. It's simply called 1968. It's a documentary on the year 1968, and it was showing all of these peaceniks, hippies, that were out in outside of the Democratic National Convention in 1968 causing riots.
Right.
And my wife turns
the irony.
To me. My wife turns to me and says, "If they want peace, why are they being violent?"
Exactly. So
and
I think
it's kind of ironic.
There's this ironic tendency where I think what happens if I don't know if this is a tangent or this is getting at it is that we find that when we can't find peace in ourselves, we tend to look for external causes that rob us of our peace, and we tend to focus on these external things and try to control them and try to say, look, this thing or this person is robbing me of my peace, therefore let me control it.
You know,
let me control this person.
Not only control, yes, there are two ways to go there. Control it, no question about it.
Right.
But this is also the scapegoat phenomenon. That's actually, it's actually a universal phenomenon.
That's what I'm getting at.
A universal human phenomenon.
So what we're doing is what we're missing, I should say, is that there is an inner conflict that's robbing me of my peace, and I should not look for external causes. I should look internal. Not that external things cannot rob us of our peace, they can, but what we need to start internally and see what inner conflicts do I have that prevent me from obtaining peace. But that's really hard to discern. So we tend to look externally, and then we try to control our surroundings. And when we can't, we tend to think things like, "I need to we tend to get destructive. I need to destroy these things that are robbing me of my peace.
Right.
So you have things like the Holocaust, and you, right? I mean, that's a grand scale, but
the scapegoat phenomenon.
But we have this scapegoat phenomenon. We blame others. You know, there's this phenomenon in psychology called projection, where we blame others for what we ourselves are guilty of. We tell people, "You're so negative."
Yes.
And you're thinking, wait a second. Is this other person really negative, or is that negativity coming from within me?
Yeah.
And am I just projecting it out from myself onto this other person?
All right. So let me
pause.
Try to recap what you're saying here. External causes of lack of peace are certainly in the world, and they're all around us. However, if you're only going to attempt to try to rid yourself of external causes of your lack of peace, you will never be at peace because it begins internally. The internal lack of peace is even more basic and more fundamental than the external.
Think about, I think of, some of the great saints who the world was absolutely in chaos around them. And yet they're smiling. They're at peace, not because they're pleased with the chaos around them,
no,
but they have the peace within that nothing can rob them of their peace.
All right, so if I were to use an analogy, we don't necessarily want to try to stop or calm the storm. Even if we had the power, it'd be nice
it
to.
It would be wonderful.
But usually we don't have that power, so instead of calming the storm all the time, we can have calm within the storm.
Exactly.
All right.
And how is that achieved?
All right. So that's the... Well, before we get to how is that achieved, why are we... Let's look at the whys first. Why are we... Do we have this lack of inner peace in the first place?
I think it gets to the fact that we don't know who or what we are. We forget who we are, so we try to live as if we were something different, which causes conflict within us. Right?
All right, so that we don't live according to our nature.
Exactly.
All right.
We have a nature.
And this causes a life of vice.
Right, right.
And obsession.
Yes.
And often addiction.
Right. So we don't know what we are. We don't know our nature. So we tend to think, we tend to pursue things that are deceptive, like pleasure, right?
Certain pleasures outside of its... its proper realm. Yeah.
And yet, how many stories do we have to hear of people who pursued certain things, thinking that it would bring them happiness, thinking that it would...
Well,
bring
look
them
at the opioid crisis today.
Drugs.
Look at the...
wealth. Look at
the pornography addiction crisis.
Pornography, all kinds of sexual promiscuity, adultery. Mm. You'd have this inner conflict. So you look at your spouse and think, it must be my spouse's fault, right?
Right.
This spouse of mine is so close to me.
Yeah.
But you start blaming your boss, or you're blaming, if my colleague would only get his work done, then...
And
you know,
this is the manifestation of the internal disorder of sin.
Right.
Is it not?
Yeah. You hear the phrase, so-and-so is carrying around the weight of a lot of sin. And so what does it do? It makes them miserable.
Makes them miserable. And like you said, you lash out.
Yeah, and what is sin? Sin is what we're saying.
Okay,
you forget what your nature is, and you live as if you were something you're not.
Why do we lash out? I think we lash out because we can't live with ourselves if we don't.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, we know it demands action.
We're like a powder keg.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't like ourselves this way.
Right.
And when we don't like ourselves and we don't love ourselves, in order to live with ourselves, we need to... we need to blame it on others, like you were saying.
Right, because I was going to say, if you don't like yourself because you're living a disordered life, you're sinning, or you're not living in accord with your nature, let's say.
Yeah.
The last thing you want to do is pile on yourself and start blaming yourself, saying, I am miserable because of my own bad choices. Right? Yeah. We tend not to go there, at least first. We'll tend to blame our parents.
Self-preservation.
We'll blame our parents, or we'll blame the economy, or we'll blame our boss, or whatever, right? Any number of things. We'll point the finger elsewhere instead of saying, what am I doing wrong? I mean, look, this. Just think about motivational speakers.
Yeah.
Motivational speakers don't sit there and tell you about what's wrong with other people. They tell you about what's wrong with you, right?
Yeah.
What am I doing wrong? I go to a motivational speaker to find out what I'm doing wrong. What's my faulty thinking?
Right? Well, I don't think we should necessarily go black and white on this because...
No.
Because when you're under somebody's authority, particularly,
yeah.
you're not. For example, you're not out. You haven't left the nest yet.
Yeah.
Suppose you're in your teens or 20s. And there's somebody that has authority over you, and they're abusing that authority.
Yeah.
Or some people in a civil society who believe that governments and police officers are abusing their authority.
Yeah.
So there's always.
Injustice
in the world.
And we recoil at it.
We can't pretend that it doesn't exist.
Right. However, I would say this, and, you know, to tie it back in with Christianity.
Yeah.
Christ on the cross had been, I mean, even before he was arrested, the words, "My soul is sorrowful even unto death." He was suffering even before they arrested him, beat him, crowned him with thorns, scourged him with whips, tore his flesh open, and nailed him to a cross after carrying the cross for whatever, a half a mile or whatever it is. Nailed him to a cross. He's suffocating. He's bleeding to death. And what words come from his mouth? "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." So what I'm saying, the reason why I bring this up is he had a certain peace,
yeah,
even in the
greatest
most
suffering.
Profound depths of injustice.
And suffering.
And suffering, yet he had supernatural peace.
All right, let's look at that closely then. If Jesus is meant to be the model for humanity, then this is accessible to all of us.
We shouldn't be pointing fingers. We should be saying, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do."
And that's accessible. That's possible.
Exactly.
You're saying.
Exactly.
All right.
Yes.
Now, without supernatural help, is that possible?
No. that is
all right.
Because naturally, if you think naturally,
yeah.
I'm stretching here a little bit, but let's say when we talk about natural, we're talking about what's physical about us, right? Our physical dimension. If I am physically getting lashed and crowned with thorns and all of this, I am suffering. It makes absolutely, it's an unmitigated evil.
Yeah.
It's a bad thing.
Yeah, not a good thing.
So we need to introduce something supernatural into this purely naturalistic experience.
Now, if we go back to our first segment, this is exactly what we lost in the original garden.
Right. We lost what was supernatural.
Precisely.
Right.
We were made for supernatural grace.
Right.
The only creature that we know of other than angels that were made for that.
Yep.
Without that... We
become purely physical.
We become animal.
Right.
Even though we are animals, but we become, in a sense, very animal-like.
Yeah.
And we
simply
are...
Simply animal.
Yeah, simply animal. And we are
although animals with potential to be living in a state of grace, whereas animals don't live in a state of grace. They just live as animals.
But all of the natural lackings that animals have, like feeling pain... eventually dying, all those things.
Yep.
The injustice that goes on with being eaten by other animals.
Sure.
What do we got here? Sounds
of
silence.
We need silence for peace, don't we?
We need silence
for
peace.
I was going to, on that topic, I meant to say when you brought it up, is that what's the first thing that somebody generally does when they're trying to calm themselves? They close their eyes.
Yeah. And they sneeze like you're doing right now.
Thank you.
Outside the microphone.
As far away from the microphone as possible.
Yes.
They close their eyes because they're trying to block out
the
pollution of their sense of sight.
Yes.
Right? They're so we tend to, when we want to be peaceful, we tend to dim the lights, right?
Yes. Now, I'm going to make this proposition and then we'll save it until after the break.
You're
going
to propose
sounds
to
of
me?
Silence. More sounds of silence. There you go.
There we go.
I want a little Simon and Garfunkel as we go out. We've been saying that trying to attain silence in our lives is an important step in order to attain peace, but we're also saying that's not the only thing.
Yeah, peace
we need,
is not
wait,
simply
wait, wait, wait,
silence.
Wait, once we get to silence, there needs to be something else going on there. In other words, simple yoga, simple meditation, in a kind of an Eastern Buddhist type of way doesn't do the trick. We're going to talk about that after the break. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. We're talking about the notion of peace. We'll talk a lot more right after this break. Don't go anywhere.
Now we're rocking.
Yep. There's got to be a method to this madness here.
I don't even know this song. I've never heard this before in my life.
All right, Cindy, explain.
Oh, come on. You know what that is.
I've
never heard that song in my life.
We're both ignorant.
The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Oh, The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
That can't be the most popularized version.
Yeah, I'm trying to make you understand that. Relax. It's okay.
Okay.
In the village, the peaceful village, the lion sleeps tonight.
Yes, right.
All right, we're back. Glad you could join us. Beneath the Surface here at WCAP, my guest, I'm Paul Morano, of course, and my guest is Mr. Kent Niebuhr, father of seven, my fourth week of the month guest, my usual guest at Beneath the Surface Radio. 978-454-4980 is our phone number if you want to jump on the conversation. 978-454-4980, our topic tonight, peace. Kent, in the 1960s, it was all about peace. In fact, they were giving the V signal, which actually meant the peace
victory,
sign.
Victory,
It didn't necessarily mean victory in the 60s. It meant peace. Peace, brother.
Right.
Now, the problem, I think, with the movement in the 1960s and beyond was it was, by and large, and I'm talking generally speaking, it was a movement to try to attain peace without God.
Yeah. Yeah, a worldly
the
peace.
The brotherhood of God kind of peace.
Right.
Excuse me, the brotherhood of man kind of peace.
Yeah.
Just tell me in a nutshell, is that project possible?
I would say absolutely not.
Because?
Because of this naturalistic tendency we have, because so much of our consciousness, our existence, is directed towards natural concerns. Food, shelter, and clothing.
All right.
So, in the pursuit of these things, in their to the extent that they elude us, to the extent that they're so temporary, right? You can eat a great Thanksgiving feast and be hungry tomorrow.
Yeah.
And this is a cause of uneasiness. And unless you have a sense of a personal God who will provide for you,
yes,
this could just destroy you. Really.
Yes.
I mean,
so in other words, the brotherhood of man is impossible without the fatherhood of God.
Yeah. What is the unifying principle? We always want to talk about, oh, we have so much, we have more in common than we have not in common. But but what ultimately is the one thing that everyone has in common that is unique, right? I mean, everyone has the need for food, shelter, and clothing, right? But this can be obtained in any number of ways, right?
What are you getting at?
That God himself, right?
That the things of this world do not satisfy.
Sure, right.
All right.
And they're temporary, right?
Yeah.
God himself can satisfy. For instance, as I brought up the example of Christ on the cross, right? In a worldly sense, in a naturalistic sense, that is utterly unsatisfying. To be crucified is utterly unsatisfying.
Yeah.
However, here he was praying for his murderers, praying for his executioners, right?
No, I know, but I'm trying to get at, if we have a lot of disquiet in our life from various things that are happening, job, relationships, marriage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, illness, how do we get that kind of inner peace within the storm? And you're saying it relates to supernatural life that is offered only by God, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the nature of God is that he's infinite, he's eternal, right? God doesn't hunger. When he became man in the person of Jesus Christ, he experiences all these things. But God from all time didn't hunger, he didn't thirst, he didn't suffer, a skinned knee or any of these things. So he's immortal. He does not die. So if we want immortality, if we want the security of immortality, not to fear death, not to fear suffering, not to fear pain.
Yeah.
And when and notice I didn't say not to suffer pain.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. That was the original garden. We weren't to suffer or to die.
Right.
Now that we suffer and die,
yeah,
we are given the strength and the light to overcome that.
Exactly.
God doesn't come down to take it away.
Yeah.
He gives us the means to overcome that.
Right.
In order that we may get to the other side and have an eternity of lack of suffering.
Yeah, exactly. If we can become one with the one who is eternal, the one who doesn't suffer.
Well, how do we become one? Let's get.
Yeah.
Isn't detachment to the things of the world necessary in order to find this peace?
Yes, but that doesn't mean to be detached from them is not like I can't own anything. I can't have anything.
It's a grasping.
If I eat a ham sandwich, then I blew it because a ham sandwich is obviously a thing of this world. Well, that's not what it is. It's the attitude.
Yeah,
towards
the attitude towards them. We can't have an I need this in order to be happy kind
exactly.
of attitude.
We can't think, oh my goodness, if I lost my job, my
right.
life would be
if
ruined.
If I lost my home, right. if I lost my this or that.
Right.
All right. So that in that kind of attitude of being, and by the way, today's gospel was about that, the rich young man.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
right.
because he was too attached to his money in order to follow God
right.
Fully.
Exactly.
And so that's what Christ brought up to him.
Right.
So then, an attitude of detachment of things of this world is a necessary step, along with the silence that we were talking about before.
Yeah.
And, of course, that relates to the first commandments, being attached to he who is.
Right.
And then have everything else come from that.
Right.
You know, seek first the kingdom of God, then all else will be given unto you.
Right.
That right from the Bible.
Yeah, and you mentioned meditation, Buddhism, Eastern types of philosophies, religions.
Yeah, so that's what we were getting at right before the break.
Yeah.
We meant that we had spoken that silence is necessary, but it's only a necessary first step. We don't want to simply be emptied of all thoughts and be emptied of ourselves so that negative things can come in. There's also a positive step after the silence, isn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah, there's
to attain peace.
With Buddhism, there's this sense of this what was called, or what I learned it to be called, was self-abnegation and sort
yeah.
of this self-denial, to the extent that it's the belief that what you need to get to is you need to get to the realization that you don't even exist.
Yes.
Right? Now this
and ultimately, it was the reason for it, I believe, from the very beginning, was to try to deny suffering.
Right.
Suffering was
right.
the big
Prince
problem.
Prince Gautama, the founder of Buddhism, the Buddha.
With humanity, suffering was
right.
the number one problem.
Yes.
And so their solution was to attempt to...
How could you suffer if you don't exist?
Completely empty yourself of your very notion of existence.
Exactly.
All right, continue.
Right. So there's this emptying, this self-denial,
yeah.
this if I feel any suffering, I haven't been enlightened yet.
Yes.
If I feel any pain, if I feel any lack, if I feel any need, then I haven't been enlightened yet. I need to go deeper into my Buddhist
right.
meditation to blah, blah, blah. So that's not what the Christian concept of peace is. A Christian concept of peace is not pacifying yourself into non-existence.
So it's not a denial of reality.
Exactly.
Okay, that's important.
It's not a denial of self. It's
not a denial because self is real.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not a denial of reality. It's always retaining your personhood, your existence, and even the type of communion with God that we achieve doesn't negate ourselves. It is me and God in communion,
yeah.
like this bond, this becoming one with each other, where the two selves, God's self and myself, don't disappear into each other, but they are in communion. They're one.
It's
the word communion means one together. It's
yes.
almost an oxymoron, because if it's one, how can you imply any togetherness? That because togetherness implies more than one. So it's a this is one of those things that go beyond a naturalistic sense of what we think, how we think we should exist. So the point of Christianity is, yes, you're supposed to empty yourself of something. It's those attachments, which is
in order to fill yourself
with
something.
With the nature of God with divine grace.
That's what I was. Yes, that's what I was trying to get at.
You fill yourself with all God's attributes. So eternity.
In other
divinity,
words, peace does not occur simply by emptying yourself.
Exactly.
And getting rid
of. If I just avoid this, if I avoid that, if
peace actually does occur by confronting the reality of our existence, which includes suffering, with the power of God.
Emptying yourself
of everything.
In being
in union with him.
Yes. Emptying yourself of everything that is not God, but filling yourself with everything that is God.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Emptying yourself of selfishness.
Exactly.
Not of self.
Right.
Period.
So when you talk about the Garden of Eden, even before the... Well, when man was created, God said, let's make man and woman in our image and likeness, right? So what we need to do is empty ourselves of everything that is not the image and likeness of God and fill ourselves with that which is the image and likeness of God.
I want to just turn a little bit into the fact that why it's so difficult for people to at least attempt this kind of silence. Because once you do face silence and you face God, who is in silence, you have to face yourself.
Right.
And for most of us, that can be painful.
Or at least very disorienting.
Now, the reason why it's painful is because we don't particularly like how we have been living, or what we did, or how we our certain behaviors, etc. And we don't want to look at it squarely, or else we really wouldn't be able to live with ourselves.
Right. Nobody wants to admit fault.
Yeah. Therefore, isn't the sacrament of confession the most peace-giving thing this side of heaven?
Yeah, right, which is, I guess, according to the way most of us think, it's very counterintuitive, right? Mm. If you want peace, you have to go and enumerate all the things you've done wrong.
Yeah.
All the ways you are imperfect, all the ways in which
you fall short. But you're owning them. That whole thing about this isn't Buddhism,
right.
That we don't deny reality, we actually accept reality.
Right.
I have messed up.
Right.
This way, and this way. I deny it, I own it,
right.
And through the sacrament of confession, I give it to Christ, so on his cross, they die.
Yeah, and not only that, you fill it with Christ.
With his grace.
With Christ's grace.
Which is supernatural life.
Which is divine life, right?
And so this, in a nutshell, is the way to peace.
Right.
Now,
peace is communion with God, being at one with God. Therefore, you have to empty yourself of anything that which is not God.
And this is the only way to begin to truly love yourself.
Right.
Now, in this life, there's a lot of things about ourselves that we will never like. We live in a fallen world,
right.
Whether it be physically or, our personality quirks or what have you. However, liking is different than loving.
Yeah.
I can love myself despite my warts.
Right.
And despite the things that I've done in the past.
Love simply means desiring the good for
willing,
the one
willing
you love.
The good. Willing the good for the self. So, so in order to truly love yourself, you have to be loved.
Right.
That's necessary.
Where is the love coming from?
Where is that source of love?
You need to recognize how lovable you are.
But the only way to is to be loved and appreciated.
Right.
Where is the source of that love?
Yeah. Who loves in such a way that they can look at all your faults, all your offenses, all your terrible things about you, however you want to describe them, and see through them.
Yes.
At not the sins, but the person who commits the sins, and I see what this person is made to be, even though all these things are like barnacles, right?
Yeah.
I see through all those barnacles. This person is in it, his or her essence, the image and likeness of God.
Yes, and if you yourself, the individual, can't get past those barnacles, you'll never experience this peace.
Right.
And that's why it's so important to be able to know that there is an infinitely merciful God, so that you can look at yourself, so that you can offer all of these sins that the guilt and the shame that we walk around with
to
God, so that he can eliminate it. That's the way to freedom. That's the way to peace. Peace only comes through the freedom of being free from your guilt and your shame.
Which enables you, opens the door, makes it possible for you to love like God and to be loved by God.
Yes.
If you can't admit, your faults, if you can't see your faults, most of us are walking around oblivious to our faults.
Yeah.
We just sort of take them for granted. If you can't see them, then you can't be open to the remedy for them.
One last point I want to make here is that we could say, okay, I'm doing all of this, and yet the world is still a mess.
Yeah.
How can I be at peace in this world? And it is very, very challenging.
Yeah.
Just one thing that St. Teresa said, that St. Teresa of Calcutta, mm-hmm. that has stuck with me for many, many years, and that is, Christ doesn't call us to be successful. He calls us to be faithful.
Right. Do the right thing in spite of the chaos around you.
And in doing that, that's where you truly find inner peace, right. despite the storm around you.
Yeah.
Mr. Kitts,
Mr.
thank
Paul.
You for the profound thinking. It certainly inspired me. I hope it inspired all of you out there. If you want to write a comment, BTS Radio 980 at AOL.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you all. Have a great day.